KDBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. After more than 4 weeks and nearly two dozen witnesses, testimony is wrapped up in former President Trump's New York hush money trial. Closing arguments begin in the morning. The powerful storms have swept across the central and southern U.S. this Memorial Day weekend, leaving at least 22 people dead and a wide trail of destroyed homes, businesses, and power outages. Meanwhile, a heat wave setting temperature records from South Texas to Florida. President Biden spoke at Memorial Day ceremonies at Arlington National Cemetery today after laying a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
We gather at this sacred place, at this solemn moment, to remember, to honor the sacrifice of the hundreds of thousands of women and men who've given their lives to this nation.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called the strike on Rafah, which reports say killed 50 Palestinians Sunday, a tragic mishap, said it's being investigated. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anywhere at the WGBW website, wgbw.fm.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The National Weather Service is in Rock County to survey severe weather damage from Sunday. The damage is to large trees, which could have been done by tornadoes. The Weather Service investigation will focus on Janesville and Milton. Tornadoes may have also touched down in Whitewater and Fort Atkinson Sunday. A lot of people are on their way home from the busiest Memorial Day weekend for travel since the pandemic. 3.5 million Americans flew somewhere.
Last year, the cancellation rate was at a 10-year low. This year, so far, it's actually even better than last year, but we want to make sure that it stays that way. We're pressing the airlines to do their part.
U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg speaking with WISN-TV's Up Front. This is Civic Media News.
1, 2, 3.
What you doing?
4, 5, 6. Counting the first place awards from the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association.
WISS in Oshkosh for the best promo. WAUK in Waukesha, best Maggie Dawn Show web story. WMDX in Madison, best web story about the Max Sync radio show. And WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids for best show, interview, and promo.
Informed, entertained, connected.
And winning.
Your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So what if every day you went to work and constantly you were under surveillance? The electric eye was following your every movement. You had a little wristband with a GPS following your every movement, counting how many things you pick up. And what if it went even further than that? What if it began predicting your movements, predicting what you're thinking? This is where we're heading, and this is scary kind of stuff, which is why I've asked my next guest to come share some thoughts with us on his most recent piece. He's got a piece over at The Guardian, "You Feel Like You're in Prison, Workers Claim Amazon Surveillance Violates Labor Law." Michael Sonato is a labor reporter there at The Guardian. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on.
So I'm looking at this story, and look, I've been talking about this stuff for several years now, that this is where we were going to end up, in a place where you're constantly surveilled, you're constantly being, figuring out how you're going to react, what you're going to think, how you're going to think, and then, creating profiles and doing all kinds of stuff. It seems that these workers in Missouri, they're kind of living through it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the scary thing is they're not even necessarily aware, because Amazon's not very forthcoming about how much they're being surveilled, what's being done about that data, because it's not just constant video surveillance. You're constantly being tracked with your movements throughout the job, but you have to download an app on your phone, the A to Z app. And that's taking data from your phone, and they're not being upfront about exactly how they're using that data, what they're using it for, if they're selling it, if they're using it to sell products to you, if they're using it to union bust. So that's the big issue here, is with companies, especially in places like warehouses where, workers' movements are being tracked, they're being watched every second. How are you supposed to organize at a company that is openly anti-union and doesn't want a union? So they're not just going to ignore that. It's not like attorney-client privilege where they're just clicking it off. So I think these workers are like, this is something. It's time for the National Labor Relations Board to weigh in on these issues and start protecting workers and ensuring that these systems and these technologies, as they get more invasive into our lives, that they're not infringing upon people's rights.
No, I think do our labor laws protect anyone from this kind of stuff? Or is this so far down the road and our labor laws are so antiquated that nobody ever thought this was possible, that this is uncharted territory that the law doesn't protect workers from? Do we know?
This is uncharted in the sense of, these technologies didn't exist at all when our labor laws were written in the 1930s and last updated in the 40s. So, what has happened is Jennifer Abruzzo, the general counsel, has called for, cases to be brought so the board can weigh in on these issues and start to, use existing laws on the books to weigh in on, how these are being used, because surveillance isn't something that's new, but the technology and capabilities of it, where it's not just one person watching a sweatshop of workers. It's cameras everywhere, and apps on your phone and tracking your movements and tracking your productivity and firing you because you went to the bathroom and took too long and didn't have paid time off in your profile account, things like that. It's something, obviously, I think elected and government officials have started to, wake up to, and it's going to become, a bigger issue as this technology progresses. I mean, just this week, we saw, and this is not related, but the robocalls in New Hampshire with the primaries, where it mimicked Joe Biden's voice. That person was indicted. And that was the first time anything like that has happened. So we're in uncharted waters in terms of AI and how that's used, and really grappling with the potential harms that it could impose, you know, in this case, on workers' rights to organize unions.
Now, it seems to me Amazon, obviously the leader in a lot of this tech stuff, you know, especially when you're talking about consumers, they know what consumers want. They've built a profile on each and every one of us. Most of my friends don't seem to really care, but my mind goes into, what if you were working for someone and they built this profile of you in every in very intimate ways? I don't know many people would be thrilled about this. So I'm looking at Amazon and going, yeah, it's not surprising that they're on the cutting edge of this kind of invasive technology. Do we have any idea if this is spreading, if this is something that everybody should be worrying about? Any thoughts?
I think so, in the sense that employers are looking to adapt and utilize and grow artificial intelligence, in the workplaces, and they're going to use it in ways that control and, get more out of workers in terms of productivity and things like that. And, you know, we've seen at Amazon and other companies that it can be used and has been used and is being used to reprimand workers, to, you know, scare workers. You're getting yelled at by an app.
By an app. No, and this is, I had talked about this about 10 years ago. Because if I remember, I think it was the Hyatt hotel chain had given all of their the people who clean the rooms, a cell phone that every 10 minutes was barking an order at them. Every 10 minutes was saying, "Hey, what are you doing? Where are you?" And you were having to check in, and it was speeding up the process, trying to get people to work more and to do more and turn around more. And I remember saying back then, you know, technology is supposed to be making our lives easier and better, not miserable. And this seems to be the direction that, well, especially for working people, where technology could be taking us.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially for, you know, low wage workers in these areas where in these industries where, you know, warehouse workers, because a lot of the attention is on, you know, people like myself, journalists, like are they going to eliminate our jobs when there are issues there, but there also needs to be, attention to, and people talk about like self-checkout lines and things like that. And those stores where you don't have, you just walk in and walk out and don't do, anything, those are coming out. But these technologies, you know, employers will find any way to cut labor cost and to lower wages and to get the most out of the workers that they do have for the time that they're allotted to work. And those are concerning. Right now, there aren't any, it's the wild, wild west. And, people are just reacting to problems after they arise, and the public's aware about it, and there's finally, you know, people are upset enough to actually take some action when, you know, we should be preemptive about these things. And
I'm with you there. I mean, so when you were talking to these workers, you know, what kind of stories were they telling you, and how is this playing on people's mental health? I mean, you know, we hear a lot about mental health right now, but I cannot imagine that, you know, knowing that every second of every day, every move you make, every action you make, every time you blink, that there's someone tracking that there's someone recording that, and there's someone analyzing that for one purpose or another, or who knows what. Did you hear a lot about maybe people talking about their mental health?
It takes a toll. And I think, the worker I talked to, Wendy, she was more, frustrated and angry that this was the fact of her working conditions, and that, you know, her efforts and her coworkers' efforts to improve upon that. These workers have been organizing at this warehouse for, the past couple of years. They've collected signatures, submitted petitions to, increase their pay, improve their working conditions around how they're treated, especially with injuries. It's been taking a toll. It takes a toll on them mentally. She's not the first person to say that it feels like being in a prison in this place, in this giant warehouse where You have all eyes on you. You have supervisors and, you know, surveillance telling you what to do. And if you aren't keeping up with your rate, you know, you're going to get hounded by a computer, and then you're going to get hounded by, you know, whatever supervisor is around telling you to pick up the slack and, you know, threatening you to fire you, giving you write-ups.
This again is another one of those reasons I tell people, this is the cautionary tale. This is the canary in the coal mine. It's all coming to us. If you work for a living, trust me, there's someone thinking about how to maximize every second of every day, every keystroke, every blink of the eye, every move of your hand to make someone profit at the expense of your body and your mental health. And I got to tell you, we got to get in front of this. Or at least try and catch up. I got to get your thoughts on Memorial Day weekend coming up. There's some strike activity going on. I see UCLA and UC Davis. They're beginning the stand-up strike there. Also in Charlotte, there's a strike going to happen.
Well, yeah, that's happening today at the Charlotte airport. You know, it's a big airport. They're going to expand it, and they're going to get, you know, billions of dollars, but the workers there are, you know, struggling to make ends meet, as a lot of airport workers around the country. You would think, you know, being at an airport, that those workers would be, you know, paid at least fair wages, but that's not the case. And a lot of these workers are cleaning airplanes and getting rushed and dealing with like really poor conditions and working in understaffed conditions and working for contractors that airlines long time ago contracted out these jobs so that, cut costs for them. And, you know, it's the contractor's problem now, wipe their hands clean. But, you know, these people are making these flights, these airports run. And, a lot of them are living in precarious conditions and struggling to make ends meet, and all those workers and, you know, airport service workers through the CIU have been asking for around the country is just fair pay and, you know, working conditions that, are fair and aren't, you know, I've done plenty of stories around airport service workers. Yeah. And it's harrowing, the conditions that they're subjected to.
Now, if I remember right, before all of these, this privatization, this, farming these jobs off to a third party logistics company, these were reasonable paying jobs, because I knew some people who did them. They weren't great. They weren't the top tier, but they were good wage, reasonable wage with good benefits. They were the kind of job you could live on. No?
Yeah. And that's not the case anymore, because, airlines, starting in, you know, the early 90s, really contracted out all these different, as much as they could, these jobs. So, we see employers do with, third party contractors. I've spoken with people that are cleaning the planes. I've spoken with people that are doing the food service work out, in the actual airport. They're not, they're working in, really poor conditions. And a lot of those jobs are, even more difficult than if you were working at a typical, store chain, just because of who you're dealing with. You have to pay for parking in the airport, go through security and things like that, that you wouldn't have to normally at a different job. So, and they're not making any more. A lot of them, very few benefits, if any, in a lot of those locations. So,
I wish them the best. Finally, I got to get your thoughts on, I see you went to Peach County, Georgia, wrote a piece about going down to Peach County, Georgia. What'd you find?
It's about three and a half hours north of where I live in Gainesville, Florida. And it's one of those swing counties in Georgia, bellwether counties that, typically shifts between Democrat and Republican. What I found is kind of, what I think we see in around the country, just economic frustration, anxiety, people are not liking, whether, you know, on both sides of the aisle, how the country is going, you know, a lot of anger from some of the Republicans I've talked to, some conspiracy theories about the election and election lies. And, you know, unfortunately, those are the things you're going to encounter when you're talking about politics in this day and age.
No, you're going to get some of the kookery. But, you know, what I want to know about is, you know, what people are thinking. Because, you know, the other day on the program, we were talking about some of the polling that's out there that, you know, people are going, well, you know, I'm doing okay. You know, I'm able to keep a roof over our head. The bills are okay. And that number has been pretty consistent, you know, throughout, you know, the last couple of decades. So, you know, individually people seem to be doing okay. But when you ask them about the local, economy or the national economy, the numbers start to fall off the table. And I got to wonder how much of that is that they're really struggling, or it's that everybody keeps saying it. We keep being inundated with these stories of just how bad it is out there. You know, I might be doing okay now, but, you know, it's really a jungle out there. Did you find any of that with people that you spoke with?
I think people have like the same economic frustrations in terms of the lack of mobility and resources. Like, you know, a lot of the pecan farmers, you know, it's Peach County is known for peach farming and pecan farming, but you know, those resources, those government subsidies, the access to the equipment and the land, it's really, you know, predominantly white people that are, you know, given those resources and that access. And that's a problem throughout, you know, the rural United States. As far as just the economic anxieties, I think people reflect what they're seeing out in the media or what, you know, their preferred politicians are saying, but then they can go to the grocery store and say, oh, you know, this has gone up twice the price. And then that kind of cascades into, you know, everything else is raw. And there have been, you know, economic struggles and issues. You know, we went through the pandemic, there were supply issues, prices did go up. There was a lot of uncertainty and anxiety, and that hasn't gone away completely. So, and I don't think that's going to dissipate overnight.
So do you think this is going to be what decides this upcoming election? Because there's a lot of folks think that, you know, the sentiment over that the economy is not going well, and there's two different worlds. I mean, you know, I talked to economists who say, look, the economy's great, we're moving in the right direction, all the numbers are pointing to positive. But when you talk to, you know, average everyday folk, the people who are going to be casting the ballots, they don't seem to be feeling that kind of love.
Yeah, I think it could be a turning point in the election just based on apathy, because I think when people start, you know, getting into those thoughts, they kind of check out and say, why bother? And that's something that, you know, the Democrats are going to have to overcome.
Most certainly. Got to get out there and start doing some actual work. But Michael, I appreciate the work. Outstanding stuff. I hope folks will take a look at your piece on the Amazon workers and the surveillance state that's going on there over at The Guardian. We'll get links out on social media. Michael Sonato, thanks so much, man.
Thanks for having me on.
I want to hear your thoughts. What's the work world that you find yourself? Are you constantly being watched, surveilled? Are there guys at the edge of your workspace with a stopwatch? No, that was a long time ago. We just do everything now with AI. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Spent a little time today. Attended my daughter's high school honors banquet. And you know, look, I'm so proud of my daughter. The work that she's done, distinguished honor roll throughout, most of her school career. Just a really smart, bright young lady. Clearly takes after her mother. Her GPA probably more than double what mine was. But we're not talking about me. Just so incredibly proud of her as couple hundred people who were there at this banquet to honor their children and the hard work that they've done. And the thing that got me is I looked around the room and I looked at these kids, well-mannered, well-behaved, articulate, proud kids who are going to inherit, a mess. I got to tell you, it gives me hope that there might be a future, and it might not be as bleak as I sometimes think and fear. But I was thinking about it, and I do have these concerns and these worries, as every parent does. Look at the world that we have created for them to enter into. Look at what they're going to inherit. All of the problems, the mass wealth inequality, the divisions in our country, the climate, all kinds of chaos. And I'll tell you, I looked around this room and my mind kept going back to all the things I hear from the right about public education's bad and that the future kids are they're lazy and I didn't see it. I walked out of there feeling pretty good about where we're going. Now, do I have concerns? Absolutely. Technology, while exciting and having potential to make lives better, we're literally living out the hopes and the dreams and the thoughts that I had as a kid of, hey, we could be the Jetsons. Life could be really good. Problem is, while technology does have the ability to make lives better, also has the potential to make lives unbearable. My generation values privacy. My kids' generation is entering a world where privacy isn't an option. Everything, your life, everything is out there on social media, where cyberbullying is huge, mental health problems are through the roof. This idea of unrealistic expectations of what we should look like and what we should have and what life should be. I looked at all this and my mind is, I hope these kids are being well prepared. In talking with some of them, I feel a little better. But you think about all the scams that are out there, all of the identity theft and the cyber hacking and all of this stuff. It just makes you crazy. Then you look at all the misinformation and all of the fake news, all of the stuff that, is designed to keep us at each other's throats and really pitted against one another. And I think of the work world that they're going to enter into. The uncertainty. Like, my son's graduating this year. He's going to be going off to college here in the fall. And, we're going, what should he major in? He's going to major in engineering. But will that job be in 5 years, in 10 years? Will that job be here for him? What kind of environment are we leaving to these kids? And it got me thinking that we've failed them. We have failed them in not preparing society for them and not putting the right safeguards in place. We've been sold on this idea of the invisible hand and the free market and all of these ideas that only benefit rich people, that only benefit the people at the very top. And I think about these kids in this room who, have just the life and the light of future in their eyes, that they're going to go on and take on the world. And my fear is that gets destroyed. Technology gets so ingrained in who and what they are that, this idea that everything is out there for the picking. Corporate America knows everything about you. your employer at some point will know everything about you, and you will be at their beck and call 24/7, 365, and that's just how it's going to be. And it got me to thinking, we need to do an awful lot more to help protect these kids, to help give them a place that's worth inheriting, that helps give them an opportunity to thrive, to survive, to do at least as well as we did. Now look, I understand, you know, things are tough, and they're supposed to be when you start out. But reality shouldn't be impossible. And we certainly should not allow corporate America to have the kind of control that they're moving toward. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Michael Sonato about his piece. Some Missouri workers at Amazon have filed NLRB charges saying that Amazon's, watching them a little bit too much, surveilling a little bit too much, keeping an eye on them a little bit too much. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Evening showers and storms, then partly cloudy and low 50s overnight. Some sun to start tomorrow, then some afternoon showers once again. Highs in the mid-60s. Sunny and around 70 Wednesday. Thursday highs warm to the low 70s. Chance of rain as well. Currently 57 degrees.
Mino and the Mayor.
Dan Van Lan and Hobart Lawrence Police.
Man, I went to the Ostoff. It's a Saturday night, and I'm checking everything out, and I look, and there's Jimmy. And Jimmy's got this ice cream cone. Not a lot of cone, but a lot of ice cream. Right, Jimmy? That thing was monstrous.
Do you have a picture?
I don't.
That's phenomenal.
Mino and the Mayor, weekday mornings 6 until 9 on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday on the program, we talked with Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. We were talking about the tariffs that President Biden put on Chinese steel and aluminum, 25% on that, 50% on semiconductors, 100% tariffs on EVs, 50% on solar panels. And the email box doth filled up with, all we're going to do is make China richer if we put these tariffs on. And I'm not quite sure what the thought process that is, but I thought, you know what, it's worth a conversation. Are we going to make China richer by moving to cleaner, greener energy? Or are we going to create an industry at home that maybe we start doing this stuff right here? I'm here to share some thoughts on, well, where we go. I've asked our good friend Mike Williams to come talk with us. Mike's a senior fellow over at the Center for American Progress, where he focuses on domestic climate issues. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. Always a pleasure.
So are we making China richer by moving to cleaner, greener technologies like solar panels because they control all of the stuff? Is that reality?
No, it could be, but no, the short answer. The Biden administration is making sure that doesn't happen. They are putting in place tariffs to make sure that we don't get overwhelmed by Chinese electric vehicles, by Chinese solar panels. They are putting in investments so we build up a domestic manufacturing industry. They're putting forward efforts to try to build out a supply chain of non-Chinese suppliers across the world, you know, making sure maybe we get our lithium from Chile instead of China if we can't meet the needs here at home. So no, the answer is no. The thing is though, Rick, there's another part to this. If we sit back and say, no, we can't do this investment. We need to just focus on what we do. We make gas-based vehicles. We make gas-based power plants. Setting aside the climate crisis, of which there is a climate crisis, so we need to deal with that. But setting that aside, even if you don't believe in that, there is a movement afoot across the world in greener technologies for multiple other reasons besides the climate crisis. In the long run, and even in the short and medium run, they're cheaper, they're cleaner in terms of cleaner air, cleaner water, they're more efficient. Eventually, they're going to become way easier to use. So people want them. They just read an article today about the country of Ethiopia has decided that electric vehicles are so much easier for their citizens. The uptake is just skyrocketing. And guess who's going to be exporting their vehicles there to China. Ethiopia? China. The same thing will happen here if we don't invest, first and foremost, and use our trade enforcement tools, which my friend Scott Paul talks about a lot, of tariffs and other trade protections. The Biden administration is doing both of those things. So, yeah, we could be overrun by Chinese goods if we don't do these things. If we sit on our hands and say, no, 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 or plug our ears and say, no, no, no.
No, I mean, you mentioned a moment ago about being overwhelmed, and yeah, overwhelmed by dumping, because you know I'm seeing articles every day of how many vehicles in excess of what China can domestically consume are just sitting waiting for a place to be dumped. And look, I've had a bunch of people say, well, why don't we just let those cheap EVs in? Poor people could get them. It'd be great for the economy. People would get, we'd get the cleaner stuff faster. There seems to be an argument that they're making. Just let the Chinese dump this stuff in. We get cheap stuff, Mike.
Yeah, no, also a bad idea. There's the political economy portion of this. There's just straight raw politics of honestly, let's just let to deal with the climate crisis, let's let the cheap Chinese stuff come in. People will then eventually say, why are we doing this? The people in your inbox, right? And they'll be right if that's the case. They will be proven right, which the Biden administration thankfully says no. The more important reason, though, is that this isn't just about integrating clean goods into our economy. It's about building a clean economy. It is about building those things here, building an industry, lifting up working people, hardworking Americans. That's also the point. So we shouldn't just import cheap stuff from China. We should try to have a foothold in these supply chains.
But what we're talking about is a major departure from what most of us in our lifetime have been trained to believe an economy is for. Most people I know is for getting cheap stuff. And I keep asking the question, what good is an economy that produces cheap stuff if you don't have jobs to be able to buy the cheap stuff? So for me, what I'm seeing coming out of this administration is truly transformational. Even if our mainstream corporate-controlled for-profit media isn't telling that story, I do see us moving in a much better direction as we are, making places the future of manufacturing here at home and holding on to those new technologies that we've gotten accustomed to losing over the last couple of decades.
That's exactly right, Rick. The other part of this too is that we haven't internalized the cost of these goods. The reason why they're cheap is not something that I think most Americans would enjoy. So a lot of these goods are cheap because they're made with extremely poor working conditions. They're made with a government that oppresses people just handing out land grants, just saying, I'm going to take all of your land, farmers, and we're going to put a factory here and we're going to pay for it. And then we're just going to dump the goods on the global economy. Not fair, terrible to the people there, terrible to the working people here. But that's the cost of low goods. Yeah. And it's not okay. So it's about time that we finally internalized that cost to make sure that when we're purchasing something, we know that the people who made it were treated decently, that it's not screwing over working people, whether in America, whether in China, whether in Germany, wherever, that it's done decently. Yeah. So we need to internalize those costs.
No, I'm with you. And I don't know if you saw the Saturday Night Live skit over the weekend about Shimu,
sure did.
Which I thought was funny. But the sad reality is you know, at the end of it is, you know, we know it's bad for us. We know it does harm to other people. We know it's no good. But are you going to do it anyway? Yeah, probably. I mean, it seems to be. And look, it's satire, and I completely understand that it's satire. And it's pointing out all of the horribles, and that's what good satire does. But at the end of it, it hits the unfortunate tone of, yeah, we're going to do it anyway.
So, Rick, this also leans into a bugbear or whatever it is, the thing that annoys me a lot. And this is something in the climate movement. This is something that goes back to the tobacco movement. There's this notion that to solve these big intractable problems, you and me, it's up to you and me. We have to solve it. We have to do personal choice issues. When in fact, these issues are so huge, they're systematic, they're giant corporations. That's where they need to be solved. So the issue of Shimu, it's not about, you know, everyday Americans figuring it out, like, oh, where is this made? How do I do this? Yes, we should probably do that. But that's completely taking the onus off of the corporations to do the right things. The ones with billions of dollars in profits, the ones with million-dollar lawyers, it's their job to make sure that these goods are not skirting labor laws and so on and so forth. And there's, on that one, just the SNL skit, there's a pretty easy policy solution to fix that. It's called the de minimis threshold.
Yes.
Getting rid of the de minimis threshold, making it so like anything under $800, we don't need to check at the border. Doesn't matter if they're like teddy bears stuffed with fentanyl, an actual thing that happens, or they're goods that are undercutting everybody else. So, you know, instead, Rick, you need to just not shop at Shimu, or we could have these companies not deal with this.
No, and this is where I was going to go with this. Ultimately, it comes down to the leaders that we elect doing the right thing so that we don't have to, you know, try and figure this out as we're trying to spend our money. Because, look, most people are struggling to make ends meet. And naturally, you're going to go, hey, I can get a T-shirt for $3. You know, hey, I can, you know, get this for, you know, pennies on the dollar. You know, desperate people are going to do desperate stuff. And if you leave that out there, you leave that door open, you leave that danger available, sadly, people are going to have no other option.
Yes. And this gets back to the clean tech issue. If we allow China to take over the market instead of investing and using trade enforcement, which the Biden administration is doing, if we just allowed them and then they were dropping $12,000 electric vehicles on the market, you're going to tell me that they're not just going to take over? Because what hardworking person wouldn't say, oh my God, I can get a $12,000 car, brand new car? But then again, then you make it so it has to be up to the person to figure out whether, like, is this the right thing to do or not? That's not fair to them. Instead, we need to make sure that the American economy is protected, that the American economy and the American worker is invested in. No, that's the right solution. And to your point, we need the politicians to do this. And President Biden's doing this.
No, and that's why I'm thrilled. And this is one of those moments where I think of the old Churchill quote, you know, Americans do always do the right thing after doing everything else first. So it seems to me we've done everything else first. And now we're at that point where we're heading in the right direction. And that's why I'm a little concerned come November, but that's a whole nother discussion for another time. So I do want to go back and reiterate the point that I wanted to talk to you about, because, look, ultimately, there are some very real concerns about moving to electric vehicles. The batteries, we've got some issues with, you know, the chemicals and the minerals that are going to be needed to make solar panels. We don't have this stuff readily available. Is there a way to make sure that China doesn't hold us hostage over these things?
Yes. Yes. There's already a law in place, the Uyghur Forced Labor Protection Act. So it's basically banning anything that comes from the Xinjiang region of China. So that's one part of it. Two, the Inflation Reduction Act gave additional credits to cars that were built with minerals that come from the U.S. or North America or countries we have trade agreements with, so our allied countries. So we're already building that market. We already have it in place. There are multiple EVs right now that fully meet the requirements. We have multiple battery plants being built in the U.S. We have lithium mines being proposed and moved forward in the U.S. So this is already moving apace, Rick. So it's something where, yes, right now, maybe it feels shaky. The vibes are off, as the kids would say. But the reality is that we're on this path.
And no, that's good. Because, yeah. But, you know, I hear this a lot, you know, and you hear on the Rogan podcast and they've got people talking about all this. You know, it's much dirtier. It's much worse to build these batteries than it is to run the gas forever. Argument that's being thrown out at us is by moving to this cleaner stuff, we're using all the dirty stuff. And you've seen on social media where the guy with the electric car is charging his electric vehicle with a gas generator in the trunk. You know, these kind of frames people hear and see. I want to make sure that we're addressing this, and it isn't a horror show that they keep telling us it is.
You're right to ask the question, Rick. And yes, I've seen that picture, that meme. That goofball is one goofball. It's kind of a hilarious picture. But yes, no, that is not happening from anybody else. So that hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of electric vehicles already on the road in the U.S., there's one doofus who was charging it with a gas-based generator. The Rogan stuff about how an EV is dirtier in its lifespan than a gas-based car, that has been debunked 9 times till Thursday. The usage of fossil fuels alone absolutely astronomically makes ICE vehicles, internal combustion engine vehicles, so much dirtier than an electric vehicle. Yes, mining for critical minerals is a invasive and intensive process, but we can do it decently. The other parts of the car are the same as an internal combustion engine. So yes, the battery has different components, and in certain places, especially in China, they're not mined in a decent way, but they are mined decently in other places like the US, Canada.
And hopefully those jobs come with decent wages, conditions, benefits. Yes. We create an economy around this that lifts us up, you know, much like we did, I don't know, when my grandparents were in the heart of their working lives.
So, Rick, I don't want to lift up this certain car company because the owner is vehemently anti-union and he currently owns the worst social media site in the world. You might know where I'm going with this. But there is a new mine, a nickel mine, coming on board in Minnesota. The workers there will be United Steelworkers members. They're going to pull the nickel out in an incredibly clean, among the cleanest methods known to humans right now. They're doing it very clean. They're going to take it out because it's near the water basin in Minnesota, and they have really strict regulations there. So instead of processing it there, they're going to put it on a train or a truck and move it to North Dakota, where they can process it in a spot where it would not be impactful, in another place where the members are represented by a union. This is then going to go into the battery of an electric vehicle. This is the vision, and that's going to be happening now.
So last question I've got for you on this then, because, you know, if this is happening, why aren't we hearing it? Why isn't this something that's, you know, in our face all the time? Why isn't this administration saying, look at what we're doing? Why aren't we seeing this?
So I think the answer, I mean, maybe this is like the resume or the interview question when you're like, what are your weaknesses? Well, I work too hard, right? In some ways, the answer is that there's a lot of this happening. So you see Jennifer Granholm out talking about the battery manufacturing facility, the wind turbine production sites, the semiconductor manufacturing facilities, all of these different success stories coming out of the Inflation Reduction Act, coming out of the infrastructure bill. There's a lot of success happening. And so I think maybe some things are not getting to the forefront of the media.
Well, or they just don't want it there. The moneyed interest that control our media, they just don't want us to hear about it. At least that's where my thinking is.
But we wrote about that story, Talon Metals. We wrote about that story in one of our papers. So we have talked about it, but yeah. We're not, you know, a major news outlet, I guess.
Well, we need to get more of that out and about, which is why this fall we're going to be doing our Working Class Heroes tour. Maybe we're going to end up in those places. But Mike, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff. Thanks for helping allay some of the right wing fears that are being shoved down our throats.
Anytime, Rick. Thanks.
I'm Mike Williams, senior fellow there at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website. He is the domestic climate guru over there. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you hearing about these great things that are going on that Mike talked about? Or are you being fed the steady diet of it's all bad, sky's falling? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1969. That was the day that began the first strike of the Chicago Teachers Union. The strike lasted 3 days, but it won teachers a $100 per month pay raise. The school board also agreed to hire 750 more teachers to help ease the overcrowded classrooms that plagued many Chicago public schools. Some of the most important victories of the strike came for black teachers. Prior to the strike, many black educators in the city could not find full-time positions. Instead, they were relegated to a permanent substitute status. In order to teach full-time, the teachers had to pass an exam. The exam included an oral portion. Often the testers would fail black teachers who had moved to Chicago from the South. They called these teachers' Southern accents unprofessional. The oral exam became a way to bar black teachers from advancing to full-time status. In the years before the strike, black educators were organizing around this issue. They also demanded changes to the school's curriculum to better include black history and literature. These black teachers did not gain much support, even from their own union. They began to organize sick-outs to demonstrate their commitment to these changes. One result of the strike was an end to the discriminatory exam process. After the strike, the school board agreed to include more African American content in the curriculum. The teacher strike had shown the power of the union. Over the next 20 years, CTU would stage 9 more work actions. Some lasted only 2 days. The longest was 19 days long. In 2002, the Chicago Teachers Union again went out on strike, recalling their historic fighting spirit. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Ah, Rudy Giuliani back in the news. Rudy! Let's start with the coffee. Evidently, there's Rudy Coffee. Rudy has come out with his own brand of a coffee, 100% Arabica beans. Roasted right here in America. Organic. And you know what? As I heard him go through his spiel as he's trying to hawk his new coffee, I started thinking, organic? Is that the target demographic you're looking for? And my mind kept going to, you know, what kind of coffee is it? It's got to be bitter and weak. That seems to be it. Or just for men. But Rudy likes it black, evidently. Or chocolate. I think it was chocolate was what he said. But hey, this is what happens when you go broke. You start hawking whatever you can to the faithful. Because also, same time, he and 10 others pled not guilty in Arizona to charges of allegedly conspiring to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Something minor like that. Rudy's going broke. Now, Rudy, another example of a Trump loyalist kind of being left under the bus. So we're gonna see where this goes. And I'm waiting for someone to try the Rudy coffee. I'm not going to. But I'm sure there will be a red hat out there who will tell me how wonderful the Rudy coffee is. Also, we find out that there were more classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. Surprise! And I got to tell you, there's part of me that goes, how long is it going to be until we find out that he did sell trade secrets, that he did give away national secrets? Because again, you know, this kissing up the dictators kind of a thing. Now, look, I have taken a very firm stance. Trump cannot be president. We cannot allow that to happen. And I don't believe you platform him in any way. I don't believe you you help him in any way, because we've seen what he's done. That said, I've had a bunch of angry emails from folks. And that's troublesome. But for me, this is a moment of which side are you on, to use an old Labor frame. Are you on the side of someone who wants to be a dictator and is telling us what he will do? There's an ad going around that the future, another Reich. I guess we're using the third or fourth Reich. And they're not even trying to hide it anymore. The Schedule F, the Project 2025, all of the talk about retribution, all of this stuff is telling you who he is and how he will lead. It seems simple to me. But I'll tell you, I've taken some flack over this, especially from people who I thought were friends. But at the end of the day, you got to stand up and you've got to speak the truth. Now, a couple of emails on the tariff front. There's some folks, you know, we've been talking about Biden putting tariffs on steel and EVs and all this. And I got to tell you, it's amazing how well we have been trained, how repetition and time works. I've got working people telling me, well, you know, if you raise tariffs, that'll mean higher prices. And you go, somewhat, yeah, that's reality. But you also get to protect domestic industry. You get to protect some of your jobs. If you've noticed, maybe you haven't, but we've lost millions of manufacturing jobs. Those used to be good family-sustaining wage jobs. Those used to be career jobs. Those used to be 40 and a gold watch kind of jobs. Now what do we got? We've got a service-based economy where people are, I'll go bring you your McDonald's. I'll do your grocery shopping for you. That's not an economy you build for raising a family. That's not an economy that has a future, in my view. Sorry, you wash my dog, I'll wash your windows. Not such a great economy. So what Biden's doing is what we need to be doing, what we should have been doing for the last couple of decades. What we heard a lot about during the Obama years, even some whispers about it during the Trump years. In fact, they did a lot of press conferences, had a lot of cute little photo ops. There are a lot of really funny pictures. But no movement, no policy, no action. And this is where I keep coming back to. There's a guy who talks a lot. And oh, does he talk a lot. Doesn't usually say much, but there's a lot of words. And another guy who just does the job. Action. You know, I was spending a little time going through some of the projects that were funded by our infrastructure bill, some of the projects funded by the Inflation Reduction Act, some of the projects funded by the CHIPS bill. And it's too much for one person to go through. And I'm only looking in a handful of places. We are making massive investments across this country, and our mainstream corporate controlled media, they're not, because it's not sexy. It's not something that goes, oh, I got to see that. Not like, you know, Donald Trump was, you know, with a porn star and there's hush money and a whole bunch of religious people went to his defense. Yeah. I mean, it's a weird world we're in. But for me, when I get these people sending me emails going, you know, you just want us to pay higher prices. No, I want you to have jobs. Because the question that I've asked for years, which are you first? Are you a consumer or are you a worker? Is it your job that's most important, or is it cheap stuff from Walmart that's most important? Personally, I think how you support your family, that's first. When you sit down at that kitchen table, do you have a bill kitty like a friend of mine in years past who would roll the dice and decide which bills he paid by the roll of the dice until money ran out? I'm a supporter of tariffs because it does a couple of things. It protects domestic industry. It helps new industries get a foothold. And it does raise some revenue because they still want access to the largest consumer market in the world. It doesn't mean they're going to stop bringing products here. It just means that, you know, they may have to take a little bit less profit out of it. Because now you're giving American corporations the ability to compete. You know, we were sold on this idea, and at least I was sold on this idea, that we would be able to choose. Remember, the right loves to talk about choice. We'd be able to choose the product on the shelf, an American-made product for a little bit more, or a cheap Chinese knockoff. But I got to tell you, that choice isn't there anymore. If it ever was. So for me, I think we're heading in the right direction. I think tariffs are a part of how we regrow this economy and a manufacturing base and how we move this country forward. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Check out freespeech.org for our videos and all of that. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com.
You're listening to The Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.